this fifth day of July, 2022, at 6:00 PM. Is it 6?
No, 5:58.
The clock has to 6.
Yeah, the clock is 2 minutes fast.
Would you like me to wait 2 minutes?
I would for open meetings.
I'll wait 2 minutes.
This is 1 minute on my iPad.
Maybe we need to get that clock set back 2 minutes. I'll wait 2 more minutes.
Well, 5:59 on my phone, so.
Yeah, get there.
Thanks, John. It's still 5:59.
Like myself, is it timing?
Yeah.
Is it timing?
Should I get a board on this thing?
What is it doing?
It's counting down to 6 PM, I think.
Trying to automatically shut down.
It does that every 6 o'clock.
You're good.
Try this again. I call this Kenosha County Human Services Committee meeting to order on this fifth day of July, 2022, at 6 PM. We all signed in for roll call. Do you want to verbally do it so that it's on the recording? Go ahead.
Supervisor Gertson, present.
Supervisor Kibicki, present.
Supervisor Stock, present.
Supervisor Stocker, present.
Supervisor Gantz, here.
Supervisor Uhas, present.
Supervisor Nedweski, present. Do we have any citizens' comments?
Eric.
Sorry, any Eric's.
Youth and Governance, Lemire, present.
Is there any other youth and governance that's supposed to be here?
Oh, Erica, and she emailed me telling me that she was on vacation.
Okay. Just moving on to citizens' comments. Do we have any citizen comments? Any citizen comments? Citizens' comments? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. We will move on to chairman's comments. I just wanted to once again thank our presenters tonight for the work that they put into their presentations and for taking your evening out to give us your insight tonight. I know that it's your personal time, and we really appreciate it. Are there any comments from committee members? Supervisor Gantz?
On the next agenda, I'd like to have an update on the payouts from the lawsuits from the opioid situations. I think there was 4 of them, and I think 2 of them have been awarded, and I'd like to know where that money is, how much it is, what it can be used for. I just think that this committee is the first point to that, and I think we need to know what's going on with that, so.
Okay, if we can add that from the human services perspective, that would be great. We did have a long presentation from Corporation Counsel at the last legislative meeting regarding the status of those lawsuits and the payouts and how they could be used. So if you would like to review the minutes from that, they might have some information in there that would be helpful as well.
Right, but my point is it should come to this committee, and we should oversee that, so.
I agree, but if you want to get a head start, there's probably some good information in the minutes there. Any other committee member comments?
No, that.
Youth and Governance, comments?
No.
All right, moving on. Approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from the June 7th, 2022 meeting?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Uhas, seconded by Supervisor Kibicki. Any discussion? Seeing none, discussion is closed. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, we have Child Support Service Employment Programs presented by Shalonda Black, our Child Support Supervisor. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. I'll stand up if that's okay. And I'll come this way, I'll stand. Good evening, Human Services Committee members. My name is Shalonda Black, and I'm one of the Child Support Supervisors at the Job Center. And one of my duties is overseeing the employment and training programs that we offer. Today, I'm going to be talking about our child support employment and training programs, and on the agenda, I'll be talking about the child support agency then and the perception of the child support agency, child support services now and the resources and the support that we offer, as well as our goals for our employment and training program, who our clients are, what their barriers are, our holistic team and our service delivery model, outreach and referrals, and finally, outcomes. Next slide. So the child support system is an old system. It's over 40 plus years old. And we do know that systems of the old were not built with equity and inclusion in mind, and it didn't have equity and inclusion embedded in the policies. And also, we weren't looking at our clients from a trauma-informed lens. It was more about collections. It was more about kind of like a pay or else type of situation. Many of our clients felt that the child support agency was a very punitive and harsh system, and they feared it because it was connected to courts, it's connected to the possibility of being incarcerated, and it felt uncertain. Many of our clients feel that the child support system is an exclusive system for the mothers and supports the mothers. And then they feel it's all about money, but what about them? And so they felt the brunt of this system. They felt that they were being forced to pay when their background or their work history or their job skills were not adequate enough to support and sustain employment. Yet, if you did not pay, if you didn't pay in full, the only option that they really had was to get drafted for court and to go to jail, possibly. So also, the fathers were blamed. You know, back in the day, you would hear deadbeat dad or the fathers just don't care about their children. And that is so far from the truth. But on the flip side, they also kind of blamed the child support caseworkers, saying that, you know, child support did not offer resources. Child support did not offer help. All they want is pushing me out here to pay. I don't have the skills, the background, the, you know, to gain this employment. Next slide, please. So in 2012, along came the CSPED project. CSPED is the Child Support Non-Custodial Parent Employment Demonstration Project, and it's actually a federally funded program. And with that project, this is the start of our new model in child support, where we are being more resourceful and being more supportive. We're making more referrals, and we're building partnerships with the community. We're making collaborations and making connections more with our clients. The CSPED project started in 2012, and it's a grant project, and the federal level, which is the Office of Child Support Enforcement, awarded these grants to 8 states. They were California, Ohio, South Carolina, Texas, Iowa, Colorado, Tennessee, and Wisconsin was fortunate enough to be awarded a grant. And within Wisconsin, there were 2 counties who operated the CSPED project. It was Kenosha County and Brown County. The name of the Kenosha's program was Supporting Parents, Supporting Kids. Each state had their own unique CSPED name. This was a study program, and because the state and the federal government wanted to understand how providing more intensive supportive services to clients, a little bit more hand-holding, would impact their outcomes in terms of being more responsive to maybe, you know, their children, in terms of having greater outcomes where they're able to gain employment and be compliant with their child support orders. So there was the group that was randomized into the enhanced services group, where they were called the treatment group, and they received all of our supportive services. And then there was the regular services group, which was the control group, and those were the ones who kind of operated under the old system. Well, go get a job, pay your child support. If you don't, we can draft you. And they compared the outcomes of the two. One significant change that CSPED brought about actually was just our approach to interacting with our clients and our caseload. With this approach, we welcomed them with resources, which was something new that they had not had before. Our child support staff took on a new role of actually recruiting clients into the program as opposed to drafting them for court. There was less of, I'm taking you back to court, and more of, hey, we have a program here that's meant for you as a child support payer, and many of our child support payers are males, are men, and we're here to try to assist you with your employment needs. There was also more reviewing of their child support orders just to make sure that the orders were right size so that they could actually be compliant with their child support orders. And then they could pay. Also, we wanted to make sure we got collections as an agency as well. So it was kind of two-pronged. So actually, a couple of years ago, as a result of SPSK supporting parents, supporting kids, and now the program we operate now, which is called Elevate, our director took the name enforcement out of the titles of our child support caseworkers, because we're moving away from that mindset, that punitive, harsh mindset. And so we refer to our case managers as child support specialists now, and that just goes towards our cultural shift. With this federal funding from the CSPED project, our hands were actually unbound now, and we were allowed to really extend and expand our reach into the lives of our non-custodial parents through the offering of employment services, connect them to additional services and resources within the community. We connected them to parenting support. And we couldn't do it all in child support on our own. So we built partnerships with those who did it best. And so those who did employment best was Goodwill Industries, so they are our employment partner. And then in terms of parenting, we partnered with one of the best, Mr. Charmaine Harris, who offered his mentorship and guidance and support for our fathers through evidence-based curriculum for the fathers. Next slide, please. So we have, prior to CSPED SPSK, we had an attempt at providing an employment program for our child support payers, which we refer to them as non-custodial parents or NCPs, so you'll hear me say that throughout the presentation. We have the Children First program. With Children First, the only problem with that is it's still a mandated program, where the other three successor programs were voluntary. But with Children First, you go to court because you're behind in your child support, you get ordered into the program, it's 16 weeks, the resources and the funding was a little bit more limited. With the other programs, they are voluntary and we have a lot more funding because it's backed by grants by the federal government and through the state. So we were able to make more positive interventions into the lives of our child support payers by pouring more time, pouring more resources and support into the payers to achieve greater outcomes. And at the same time, while we were making these interventions, we were also reinventing our agency and the perception that we had on our child support payers and our agency culture. Next slide. Forward, please. Okay. So when CSPED came along and it was introduced to our child support payers, they were actually extremely excited and eager to become a part of the survey. It started with a baseline survey so it could be studied to determine what the impact was. And their primary three reasons for wanting to be part of CSPED was, one, they really wanted to improve their relationship with their children. More than 50% also wanted to improve their current job situation. The other 54% wanted to do something about the child support debt that was hanging over their heads. Next slide. So our goals with our employment and training program initiative has been to increase our engagement and to, you know, we didn't want our payers to be afraid to call their caseworker, for whatever reason, because they felt that, well, if I call, I could be going to jail. If I call, I might be going, I might have to go to court. So we want them to call and get the resources and the services that they needed. So parents, when the feds were looking at offering an employment and training program, they looked at child support as the lead, because with child support, we actually have access to the target audience, which are the non-custodial parents, the child support payers. So it kind of made sense for child support to take the lead in these initiatives. As well, child support has a long-standing history with many of these families. We start with the mom when she's actually pregnant with the child, and if she's on any type of state benefits before the child is born, we're working that case. And we have that case well beyond the child turning 18 and graduating from high school, and beyond, because if the payer owes state debts or arrears, we're still working with them to assist with getting those debts paid. So we had access to the target population. We had access to key information about the full family background, the mom, the dad, the children. And we created financial barriers. The child support system has created financial barriers for these non-custodial parents. And so now we have the opportunity to provide some type of support, resources, and assistance. So at the state level, the state has four goals. The state is the Bureau of Child Support. They have four goals for their employment and training programs, and these are the goals that we're working under with our Elevate program now. The underlying goal is to increase NCP compliance with their child support orders. So our answer to that at the local level and down at the Job Center is to provide innovative programming and collaborations. And we're doing that by kind of like I said, expanding our reach and working with other agencies and partnering with other agencies to provide resources, because we don't have all the funds to do it. We don't have all the resources to do it, but we can maximize the resources for the clients by reaching out and being collaborative. As well, we provide innovative programming by not just herding our clients through our program, but really we take the time to listen to what their needs are, what their struggles are, what their barriers are, and identify how we can uniquely help and support each client in the system. Our strategic goal is to increase the NCP participation in the workforce, and again, we're doing that by tailored employment activities. And the operational goal is to shift our child support services culture, and the state is looking to shift their culture at the state level from that traditional enforcement focus to a more supportive and engaging approach. And then finally, the social goal is to increase their engagement with the lives of their children as a means to increase family, social, and economic well-being. And we've partnered with Mr. Charmaine Harris for the Fatherhood Franchise Program. Prior to that, it was the Dedicated Dads Program to help increase parent involvement and responsible parenting. In the end, the agency has two goals as well, is to help the NCPs meet their full child support obligations, and then we're also looking to increase collections as well. So with the CSPED project, we finally had data that actually showed who our clients were. So before CSPED, we just knew that we have these clients, they're ordered to pay child support, they're not paying. The perception is, internally there's a perception that they're just lazy, don't want to work. But once CSPED came along, they actually studied and realized that in Wisconsin, 86% of our child support payers are men, 76% convicted of a crime, 95% were ever in jail or in prison, 27% had not completed high school or GED, 42% had a high school diploma, 27% had some college, and just about 2% had a four-year degree. Next slide.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
And then also there are other chronic barriers that we realized our child support payers were facing. Outside of the systemic and institutional barriers outside of their lives that are surrounding them, that they're dealing with, many have diagnosed and undiagnosed mental health issues and concerns. Many came into the program with anxiety and frustration with the child support process, some experiencing ALDA issues and concerns. And as I mentioned in the slide before, incarceration, recidivism, their criminal background, and at that time, the economy and the job market, if their job skills and their background wasn't up to par, it was difficult to maintain a job. And so we saw a cycle of them being in temp jobs and not getting to the next step, to full-time employment. But even still, many of the clients still said that they sincerely wanted to find work. They sincerely were concerned about their children, and they wanted to spend more time with their children and wanted to support their children. And we, in turn, really wanted to support them. This is a national story, so across the 8 states here, this just shows that, kind of relates to the previous slide, where there's not just one story that tells the story of our child support payers. Again, there's transportation barriers that they're facing, having a criminal record, not having a steady place to live, not having the skills that employers are looking for. Some are dealing with their own health issues or maybe taking care of a family member, dealing with alcohol or drugs, or just anger management issues also. So it's just a combination of needs and barriers that they're facing. Next slide. Okay, so our child support team is a holistic team. We have 11 child support specialists. who are working to get referrals and lead our clients into our employment training program. We have a dedicated case coordinator, an employment support specialist, a fatherhood parenting facilitator. We have a plethora of community agency partners. And then we also, we consider the parent to be part of our team as well, because you know, our goal is to make sure that they are successful. And then we hold ourselves accountable to the program, but we also hold our parent accountable to the program and to their plan. Next slide. So some of our community agencies that make up our holistic team that we make many referrals out to would be Kenosha Human Development Services. We brought them to our employment table to do a presentation and for them to share their information and resources and how they support clients. We shared our employment and training programming information with them. So if we have clients who are dealing with the mental health issues, AODA, they have so many supportive services and funding opportunities to help support the clients. If there's clients who cannot go to work, but they're trying to get on that Social Security check, they have benefit specialists there who can assist. We'll try to get our clients connected to economic support if they need the medical insurance through BadgerCare or on food share if they qualify. Then once they're in food share, we try to maximize their resources and have them dually enrolled in our program and get them enrolled in FSET, because FSET has other training dollars. So does W-2 and EOA, where they may be able to go to school and get certified for their CDL or CNC or machine operator, different certifications that way. We try to get them connected to the outreach center. If they're dealing with legal issues or concerns, there's free legal advice there. There's attorneys that are there to assist our clients and support them and guide them through legal situations. We have funds available through our Elevate program that come down from the federal government that allow us to help pay the reinstatement fees for driver's licenses once their driver's license are suspended due to child support. We want them to stay on track and get a job, you know, maintain their job, so we give them their license back, pay the fees. There's opportunities for funding if they need work supports, if they have tools, a uniform just to go, you know, to get to work in or to interview in. We have our employment support specialists. We'll meet them at Walmart. We have funding for that too. And then Goodwill Industries is our employment partner, and Fatherhood Franchise is on here. So these are just some of the agencies we make referrals out to. So what are our core services? We have enhanced case management. So when they come into the program, they start off with a baseline survey, or if they were in any of our previous employment programs, they just go directly into services, and we get them connected then to any resources that they may need to the other agencies that were on that previous screen. Once they come into the program, everyone who comes into the program has their order reviewed to make sure it's set appropriately and right size. If the order is set too high and it doesn't meet their working situation now or their circumstance, we have a support specialist who will review their child support order and take it back to court and have their order changed. They go on to employment services, where we have a dedicated employment support specialist who will work with them to build a resume, give them job leads, tailored job leads. She does a lot of job coaching and kind of like counseling. They look at her as and they really appreciate just the time and attention that she gives them to support them through their employment journey. And then of course we have the parenting education and services. We always keep our lines of communication open between our employment team, our child support services specialist team, our parenting facilitator. We check in if we make referrals to other agencies. We like to follow up to make sure that our clients are being responsive to the plan and being responsive to that other agencies, because we want to make sure we keep the program credible and that the clients are in line with the plan that we have set forth for them while they're going through their employment journey. Next slide. Okay, so part of our approach to service delivery is education and information sharing with staff. So we've set up trainings, as I mentioned before, trainings and opportunities for staff to learn and understand trauma-informed care, understanding the importance of viewing our clients through a trauma-informed lens as opposed to that historically narrow focus lens where it was that pay or else or just get a job. But we know now, based off the barriers that were identified and the backgrounds of our clients that were identified through the study of SPSK, that that's so much more easier said than done. Staff have received equity and diversity training. They understand the importance of inclusion and opening their eyes to cultural differences and experiences. We really started moving away from that traditional punitive, kind of a harsher system of collections. And we're being more innovative with our approach. We're not pipelining any of our clients through. We're taking time. As with Children First, it was like 16 weeks, you're in and you're done. With Elevate and with SPSK, it was, you know, we're gonna spend time to try to get you on track. It wouldn't serve the client well to just get them into a job when we haven't worked through some of the other hurdles and barriers and trying to get them through connected to some supportive services. So, and also we want to make sure that we are being accountable. So we have an accountability approach also, is that we're just holding our staff accountable to making sure that they're at least offering Elevate as an opportunity to our clients. And as one of our partners in Brown County says, we want to keep Elevate at the top of our mind and the tip of our tongue. So anytime you find someone in need, let Elevate try to be that answer to them. We try to hold our partners accountable. We do follow-ups. We check in with them to make sure that they're meeting the expectations for the client. And then we just want to make sure that we're maintaining integrity of the program. I already talked about many of the incentives and our service delivery, transportation assistance. We do offer gas cards and bus passes for clients. We get them duly enrolled into programs. If they need training and certifications, we can offer that as well. Next slide. And then in terms of checking for the differences between the enhanced group and those who were receiving regular services, those who were getting the extra kind of hand-holding through enhanced services received contempt hearings less than those who were in the control group. Fewer warrants were issued for those who were in the enhanced group versus the control group. We had fewer license suspensions for those who were in the enhanced group versus the control group. Those who received the enhanced supportive services obtained employment 2.5 times more than those who were just left on their own to figure out and navigate the systems out here. They made slightly more income, and overall, they were more engaged in the lives of their children. This slide is kind of significant, the bottom part, in terms of the increase in satisfaction. So one thing that was measured as an outcome was that those who were in the extra services group, after going through this entire supporting parents, supporting kids program back in 2012 to 2017, at the end, there was a 68% increase in the satisfaction for those who received the extra services. And so that just spoke to us being very intentional and being supportive of the clients and giving them something that they kind of longed for and needed and were looking for from the child support agency. And then also you'll notice that the regular services had an increase in satisfaction. And although they didn't get the enhanced and intensive case management support, because we changed our overall agency culture and we had a shift in our mindset, it was just a way of doing business now from the case managers, where they were just being more service oriented. So as a result, those who didn't receive the extra services, in a way, received the extra services because we were being a little bit extra with our services. Next slide. And so currently today we are operating the Elevate program. Elevate is operating in 5 counties, Kenosha, Racine, Brown, Marathon, and Wood. And it's my hope that, you know, one day we're going to move out of a demonstration phase and actually offer these types of interventions and employment supportive services throughout all of Wisconsin. We are embracing a new philosophy that sees enforcement as only part of the equation. The other part is this whole new holistic, this service-oriented culture that we have been shifting towards since 2012 with the implementation of the C-SPED project. Last slide. So this is a quote from IRP, which is the Institute for Research on Poverty out of University of Wisconsin-Madison, regarding the findings of the C-SPED project. Overall, findings from C-SPED suggest that the potential exists for child support agencies to lead broader interventions, incorporating components beyond child support services alone,
aimed at helping unemployed and underemployed non-custodial parents to increase the reliability of their financial support for their children. The results from their study suggest that these efforts can improve non-custodial parents' attitudes toward the child support program and sense of responsibility for their children, and also reduce punitive enforcement with bigger impacts on right-sizing the orders rather than reducing the payments. So if we have the orders set just right and we have the supportive services and we're, you know, being a little bit more engaging into their lives, they're going to more than likely be able to pay their orders. Thank you for your time. Questions?
I don't want to run too long because I don't want to cut into your time.
So but you can ask questions.
Does anyone have questions?
Go ahead. I do.
Yes.
My first question is, you said Elevate is a demonstration. Wow. And at the end I heard, well, we'd like it to go active. What does that mean? Can you elaborate on that for me?
Sure. Yep. So it's being studied right now. So it's not something that's rolled out to all of the Wisconsin counties. It started with SPSK with just two counties to see how effective it was. So it's being studied. To demonstrate whether or not having child support lead such employment training projects is effective. So now they've expanded it from two counties to five counties. So it's still another study program where they have the Institute for Research on Poverty kind of doing baseline surveys and evaluating the data. And this project is going to go on until March of 2024. And then they'll have more outcomes to determine what's
But next. We're not really in a demonstration mode. They're just studying us. It's a demonstration for the state. We're actively doing what the program is. Is that correct?
We're actively doing it, yes, but it's still being studied. I don't know if I'm answering that correctly. Nina, if you can help out.
We have to get a waiver to provide employment services because it's not a allowable cost. So the state of Wisconsin got a waiver. So that's why it's still a demonstration. And they're doing it all over the country and in different states. So the hope is that one day the Office of Child Support Enforcement will say, this is part of what you're gonna do as your job as a child support worker.
But even though we're getting the waivers, I mean, they're studying what it would be as if it was fully active, correct?
Yes, yes.
So I mean, if in 2024 they say, oh, this is going active everywhere, we would already have been doing that,
yes,
correct?
Correct.
So, okay. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Second thing is, how many cases do we actually have in Kenosha County? I mean, I saw percentages and stuff like that, but how many cases, you have 11 support specialists that are handling all these child support cases?
Okay, so you're talking about the overall child support caseload or our employment and training caseload?
Well, how about both?
We have over 11,000 cases overall in child support. So I think each enforcement worker carries about 1,000 cases each.
Wow.
Yes. How many people do we have in our employment and training program? That's a good question. I would say we probably have over 300. I would say between 300 and 400 clients currently in our employment and training program. Please don't quote me, but that's just...
So that was my question. What is the percent of participation in the employment training program of total?
You said over
cases.
300?
Yeah.
So out of 11,000, it's a sample of maybe 300 to 400?
I would say about 300 to 400 clients.
And once they get a job, then they age out. But if they lose that job, they can come back in. Mm-hmm. And if they're not compliant with the program, we give them so many chances to try to re-engage them, then we're going to have to disenroll them and put our energy somewhere else.
Any other questions, Supervisor Gens? Supervisor Gens, were you all done?
Yes, I'm done. Thank you.
How do you route someone to the special services versus the traditional? How do you, when you have a case come in, how do you decide which program? Was it randomly or?
That was for the supporting parents, supporting kids. Yeah. So that was a randomized. So they were just, that was before my time, but from what I understand, they were randomized and they were just plotted into either the enhanced or the regular service. With Elevate, the program we offer today, they're not in categorized. They're not being categorized. So anyone that comes in is going to get the enhanced services regardless.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Just real quick, you had mentioned that I believe you said that was the Children First program was mandatory, but these other ones were...
The other ones are volunteer.
Volunteer. So are there people that are in the both the mandatory and the voluntary, or do they have to pick one, or how is that how is that determination made?
It has to be one or the other. So if the participant is not at the point where they're being drafted for court, or they're in the contempt process and they're in family court for not paying their child support, if they're not in that process, they can come over to the Elevate program. Since Elevate doesn't want to hold any court actions above anyone's head, we don't want them to feel coerced into being part of this program. We want them to naturally come in because it's something they want to do and it's voluntary, and we have the courts outside of that process.
My question, there I have three pages of questions, so I'll probably follow up with you.
Okay.
Offline, but was it my correct understanding that this particular program is federally and state funded through grants? There's no levy cost in it, or am I incorrect?
Well, the child support program receives one-third funding, receives two-thirds funding for all of the one-third funding that we put into the program that we have to put into it.
Right, the child support program in general, but this, the support.
That is fully funded from the state.
Right, this is the experimental program,
if you
will call it. The demonstration is granted, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions from supervisors?
So you said there's between 300 and 400 in the employment and training program. Do they, is there like special qualifications for that, or are they, or is it more of a, that's how many people we can handle with how many we have, like how many people?
No, so they get evaluated first. So we want to make sure that the clients coming in at least have a current support order, because once they start working, we want to make sure that the money starts to go to the family, to at least one child in the home. So the support specialists are kind of vetting them out to see if, you know, do you have a current support order? Are you unemployed or underemployed? Pretty much, you know, if you're unemployed or underemployed, you're going to be eligible for the program. And then it just depends on which route you come in, because it's still being studied. So some who have never participated in the previous program, SPSK, they can come in and start the baseline survey so that IRP has enough of a population to study. They're studying it from Kenosha, from Wood County, Racine County, Brown County, and Marathon County, all those clients. So it's pretty much if you're not paying and you're underemployed, unemployed, and you have a current support order.
Thank you.
Any more questions from supervisors?
I have a couple. Do you offer CNA training for any of these folks, because there's a big shortage here?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. There's one more coming.
That's your luck. So we try to connect our clients to other programs, such as like the FSET program or the WIOA program or the W-2 NCP program, because they have more training dollars than Elevate does. So when we come in, we actually have them vetted out to see what other programs they may be eligible for, and then we try to connect them so they can be dually enrolled, triply enrolled into other programs, and they can get like CNA training or CDL training.
Okay. Do you have an idea how much per year more is coming in from this process where the child support is being paid? How much more is being paid because of this process? I'm asking that poorly.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, as a result of this, I don't have those numbers.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions from supervisors? Okay, well, I will be following up with you. I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Okay,
thank you so much. That was excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have
for your time.
Thank you.
Our next presentation is Lindsay Sarar.
Good job.
She is our lead abatement coordinator for KCPH, and she is going to talk about the HUD lead paint program.
Yes. So.
And I heard before you're fully grant funded as well.
Correct. Correct. So my program name is Kenosha Racine Lead Free Communities Partnership Program. We're actually in the midst of a rebranding of our name, because that's a mouthful, so we're trying to kind of rebrand at this point. But we are supported by the HUD for the U.S. Housing Urban Development Grant. So you can go to the next slide. I I'm the supervisor of the program. I oversee four other employees on my staff. I have two administrative staff, and I have two also risk assessors on my staff. And so I'll kind of go over what that is in a little bit further when we get in there. So we are also a lead hazard reduction demonstration grant. So when you talk about the demonstration, that's just, again, a wording for how our grant is. There's different types of grants. So right now we're in the midst of a NOFA again for grant funding because there's so much money for lead. However, we are a 42-month grant. So we won't be applying at this point because we're only seven quarters into a 42 grant cycle at this point. But every year they come out with a new, either a demonstration grant or a hazard reduction grant at this time. So, like I said, the grant period performance, we were awarded in January of 2021. We applied during COVID in August of 2020. And was awarded finally our money in 2021, and it goes till in 2024. Yeah, it's a $4.4 million grant. Last grant cycle, we had $3.3 million worth of funding as well. $4 million of that dollars actually goes to lead remediation. So we're actually going and using that money towards salaries, benefits, training purposes, and then a huge portion of that money actually goes towards going into the home and remediating lead hazards that we find in the homes. $400,000 of that is in Healthy Homes funding, which is a different pot of money. So when we go into the homes and we have these risk assessors, they're certified, myself as well, we're trained and certified to go into the homes and actually identify where lead paint hazards are. So when we're talking about lead, we don't do anything with water. So we're not touching anything with water because the water utilities have their own funding for that. We're just going in and we're identifying in homes built before 1978 any lead-based hazards, any peeling, chipping, cracking type of paint. And so when we go into the home, not only are we identifying those hazards in the home from the lead paint, but we're also identifying Healthy Homes things that we find. So we might find maybe that a staircase doesn't have a handrail. We find that there doesn't have CO detectors. Maybe there's a trip hazards on stairs. So sometimes we might replace handrails. We provide CO detectors. We replace stairs, we do decks sometimes, deck stairs be for the hazards that we find in the home. And there's just, it's a different process that we go through in that where we grade all the hazards that we find in regards to the Healthy Homes. So when we go into a home, we have a cap of 20,000 per unit when we go into an actual home to abate. So if we go into a two-unit home, that's $40,000 that we can use towards that home to abate lead hazards. And then if it's a cap of $5,000 for the Healthy Homes funding. So I could put $10,000 worth of Healthy Homes funding and $40,000 worth of lead, actual lead hazard funding into that home. The five primary goals of the housing is the housing inspection. Like I said, the risk assessors are certified to actually go into the home and identify those hazards that we find in the homes. And then actually having people come to the table then to actually get the homes remediated from those hazards that we found. Not every time that we go into a home do we actually find a hazard that has to be fixed. So we might go into a home and those risk assessors, they might go and they might find that this wall right here has a lead paint on it. It's been painted multiple times over. However, it's not a hazard because it's not peeling, chipping, cracking. So we're not gonna go into the home and we're not gonna fix that home, that wall, because it's not a hazard. But if there was a hole in that wall or if it's peeling, chipping, cracking, then we would fix it. Same thing with windows. Obviously windows, doors, friction surfaces, things like that. We're going into the home and we're trying to fix any type of lead dust hazard that we find in the home. We're using special equipment and we're also doing sampling while we're in the home as well. And so when we're doing those assessments, not only are we trying to get homes to identify those hazards, but we want people to come to the table and actually spend money to get those hazards remediated. This is a low-income program, so you do have to low-income qualify for this program as well. We also do outreach and training activities, and we also want to obviously expend money. We don't want to bring money in, and then we do have grant match requirements that are part of this grant as well. So when we wrote for this grant at the time, obviously it was in the middle of COVID, but we decided we were gonna do 204 units completed, and this grant does go into Kenosha and Racine. So we are not focusing just on Kenosha, it is for Kenosha and Racine as well. And then also too, we're gonna go into 225 units and actually identify the hazards that we find in the homes, so. So the grant progress, the current cycle, we're currently in quarter seven, which would be then the July 2022 to 2020 and September of 2022. The expenditures to date is close to $750,000. Risk assessments, we've gone into 71 homes where we've identified hazards, and we've actually gone and done work in 34 of those homes, and we've collected $132,000 in match requirements as well. And so when we're going into homes, like I talked about the $20,000 cap, the program is required, we ask that the homeowners, we don't income qualify on the homeowners, we income qualify on the actual tenants. And so we're working, we work with the homeowners, they have to provide 15% of that $20,000 cost. So when we do a project, they're providing 15% of construction cost, and we put a 3-year lien on the property as well, so that they can't turn around and flip it. Because the point is we want to get families, we want to get low-income families in there, we want to save children from not being poisoned, and we don't want just a cycle of using our program to put in new windows, siding, doors, and replacement services like that. So we want them to make sure that they hold on to the property for families with children of the age of 6, and things like that. So I'm in my 5th year of being with Kenosha County Public Health, but this is the 6th grant cycle overall since 2007 that Kenosha County has held on to. Total amount between that since 2007 is almost 17,000. And so we have, where that means where we've actually gone in and we've identified the homes that have hazards. About 1,300 of them have actually received the funding to remediate those hazards. So 82% of homes around that between Kenosha and Racine have actually received funding that have gone through the program. So we've received almost $19 million worth of funding in the grant services. Now each grant is typically 36 months. This grant cycle is 42. They've extended it, obviously due to things like COVID, and they know that it's just taking us longer to spend money and things like that. So, next slide. So childhood lead poisoning. As I said, we are typically only dealing with lead paint hazards. I know that when you hear about lead, you think water, the crisis with Flint, Michigan and things like that, and water is a problem, and we do have lead service lines here in Kenosha. However, the number one thing that children get poisoned from is lead paint. It's the dust, it's the friction surfaces, it's the dust and the creation in the air, children putting hand-to-mouth behavior. And so a very small amount of dust and or lead paint, peeling, chipping paint ingested by a child can poison a child. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to remediate that. It's invincible to a child. It's typically not seen to a child until their earlier developmental stages where you're seeing childhood lead poisoning. And so we're wanting to make sure that we are remediating that right away. Children that are on Medicare are required to be lead tested at the ages of 1 and 2. So it is a requirement, especially if we live in older housing stock, as much of Kenosha is down in this area, then you're wanting to make sure that those children are taken care of. It has lifelong effects, and there is no cure for lead poisoning. Once your child is poisoned, typically you can get the levels to go back down. So a child is typically tested for blood through a capillary testing with your finger prick, or they get a venous blood draw, and that's how a child is tested for lead. But there is no cure. You can bring the levels down, but you can't get it out of them at some point. The effects of lead on children. As you can see, it's just a lot of hyperactivity, learning disabilities, then the cost to child's future, lack of employment, criminal records, socialization problems, and then the cost to society, healthcare, special education, and juvenile justice system. I just did a presentation in regards to equity and the incarceration that childhood lead poisoning does create that juvenile justice. So it has a tie to children that are lead poisoned typically end up having lower IQs and then also being incarcerated. So here's a lead investment return quote in regards to what it would actually cost to replace windows in older homes, and then their IQ, and then what that actually does in regards to the work that we do. So we're actually going into homes where it's a good investment. It's a good return on investment when it comes to the work that we're doing in homes. So the last grant was from 2017 to 2021, and 226 children aged 0 to 17 were in homes where actual lead services took place. And this is just a little, you know, a capture of who were actually seen data-wise and the ethnicity of the children that were seen, mostly African-American, not Hispanic, Latino families, are the ones in the homes where we're actually serving in Kenosha and Racine. Program collaborations. We typically work with the Women, Infant, and Children program and the weatherization program. We tie along together weatherization program through RKCA typically does a whole house approach when we go in there as well. So not only are they doing their weatherization part of it, which I used to work for, so I know quite a bit about that as well. So they're going in and doing, you know, furnaces and making the home more energy efficient. We're going to go in and we're going to make the home also lead safe. So typically when people hear about the weatherization program, they think windows, and then when they hear about the lead program, they think windows as well. We have vinyl windows. It's not a hazard. It's not a lead paint problem. So we're not going to take care of it. So that's what people typically think when they hear about our program, but we have to go in and actually find the hazards. So we work with the clinic to do blood draws. We work with the environmental program, which if a child is tested within Kenosha and or Racine, if a child has a high blood lead level, they are required, the property owner is required to have to take care of that hazards that they find in the house. Or we do a nursing investigation. So we not only do an environmental investigation, we do a nursing investigation as well, which is communicable disease, the nursing aspect of it. They're going to try to figure out where that child is. Home visiting, Section 8, neighborhood inspections, city and county of Racine health departments. I'd like to see some more synergy in regards to the nursing programs, pediatrician offices, city inspections, and at-home daycares and pre-K programs. We want to get, I know a lot of things happened during COVID, and we want to try to get back where children are actually going into the home, into the office and getting tested, because they did not. They're doing more telehealth services than they were before, and so we're not getting the services. The children aren't getting tested, so. And like what I said, what can Kenosha County do? Target homes built before 1978. We focus on owner-occupied homes with children, rental properties, and vacant properties. We're building local capacity to train contractors. So we just held a service where we were providing scholarships to people to get their license to actually do work in a lead-safe manner. So instead of just doing the work, we were working with contractors to learn how to do it in a proper manner. So, support and conduct critical research to inform efforts to reduce lead exposures, and then implement accountability structures, and that ties in with working with the local pediatricians, housing inspections, Section 8, things like that, to make sure that they are doing the things that they need to help remediate these issues. That's what I have. I know you guys have a little
excellent.
So. Trying to go through that.
Are
you willing to take some questions? Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation.
Yeah.
You mentioned the low-income threshold, but you didn't mention that number on that. What is that number?
Currently, a family of four in Kenosha would have to make under $71,600 to qualify for the program. We go off of the age of anybody 18 or older in the home. So in Racine, it's $69,000 under the for a family of four.
Okay.
Yes, so it's actually higher in Kenosha. I do have some brochures as well, but it's actually higher in Kenosha. Our income guidelines are actually higher this year.
Great, and then the homeowner has to come up with 15% of the money, is correct?
Correct.
And you also mentioned that after the project is completed, to hold on to it for 3 years.
Correct.
Has there been a study done as how many people hold on to it for 3 years or at the 3 year threshold and get out and said, you know, I got everything rectified, I'm out of here, bye-bye?
Typically, we even have people coming out of the housing market is so hot right now, they're gonna come out of the market, right? And they get something done right now and they're trying to flip it right now, so they're gonna pay us back all that money.
Okay.
So that's where I'm like, I don't want money coming back in.
Right.
I want to spend money. I have not looked at what it is after 3 years, if there are flipping it or not. Typically, it's mostly rental units. You're not dealing with a lot of owner occupieds,
right.
And then they won't be flipping it at that point. It's the rental units that you're seeing the turnover.
Right. And then what I'm concerned about is the flipping part, because those children are going to be in a safe environment now, but
correct.
After that, they're not. That's my concern.
Yep.
Thank you for the presentation.
You're welcome. Any other supervisors? Staff?
You had mentioned that there's some mandatory testing for Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any mandatory testing tied
Medicaid,
into...
Medicaid, yeah, or, Medicare, whatever
yeah.
the folks get it, whatever.
Is there any mandatory testing from your program tied into if you've identified a house that obviously needs the remediation, even if they're not on that program, are there still requirements that
correct.
They're
going
to be tested at the end of the day? They're getting tested no matter what, if you've identified that there's a hazard in them?
Typically, to be a part of our program, if they haven't been tested, we encourage them to get tested if they're under the age of six.
Okay.
Yes, we require it. They can sign a waiver and say that they don't have to. Some people don't want to put their children through that. Sometimes it's traumatizing to get that testing done. And so, but we do, as a program, we require that, you know, and say you need to have your child tested to see where we're at, because we want to see where they're starting at, and then the work that we've done actually has helped lower those levels. So.
And I'm assuming you're wording the work is being performed by contractors. What does that process look like? Do you just have a list of contractors that they have set prices, or do you put it out to bid? How does that work?
We put it out to bid. So
okay.
We have a procurement process that we put it out to bid. We work with a set pool of contractors who have gone through that training that I talked about, and we pay for them to be able to do the work in a proper manner. If it's a case where there's a child that's been poisoned, they are not allowed. You can't have contractors working on those properties unless they've been certified through the Division of Health Services. In the state to have a special license to even set foot on a job site to do that actual work, because you don't want to be creating more of a hazard. So
are you able to get on their list right now, or they have a backlog too?
Nope.
Okay, good.
Nope. We were actually always looking for contractors. It's just a problem because they don't want to have to go through the rigmarole of dealing with the state. Because you have to put in notifications and things like that, and you can be fined quite a bit of money if you don't do work in a proper manner. And then you have to carry certain insurances, and if you have to carry certain insurances, then the costs start to go up. So we just want to try to work with them and work with those contractors to get them stabilized and set up an OR program. So.
Awesome, thank you.
Okay, I have a couple questions. You said there was a $20,000 cap per home.
Correct.
Or 40
per unit.
Mm-hmm. Per unit, so if it's a two-unit home, it's 40. But what is the average abatement cost that you've experienced in Kenosha Racine area?
It is around, we wrote this grant, it was around $12,000. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
yep, per unit.
If you go into a home for an inspection and you find chipping, peeling, paint, whatever,
mm-hmm.
in one room,
mm-hmm.
but it's nowhere else in the house, do you just fix that room?
Correct.
Or do you fix the whole house?
Correct.
Just the room?
Just the room.
Just where the problem is?
Just where the problem is, yep. Typically, when the smaller the projects, the homeowner will try to be like, okay, well, here, take this course, and you can do it yourself. Like, learn how to do these things, right? We don't want them to chip and join and gain up these homes, because, you know, that's not what it is. It's not, we don't want them to do that. But we'll work with them to say, you have this small amount of work, do the training, here's the training, I'll pay $200 for you to take a 1-day class to learn how to properly do the work so you could take care of that hazard instead of going through the program. It's either way. You either try to encourage them to go through the program and pay that small amount of 15%, or you encourage them to do it themselves. So
you can have a, you know, an area on a wall that's chipping or cracking, whatever, and you're trying to get the homeowner to do it themselves by taking a sort of this is how you do it course.
Correct, yeah.
And that the cost of that course is what?
$200. Well, I'll pay up to $200.
Up to $200?
Mm-hmm. It's around $275.
So a homeowner could take the class,
yeah,
and maybe do it themselves.
Or I'm going to have a contractor come in and pay $1,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, but now it's like, now how does it get to $12,000 on the average? I mean, why wouldn't the homeowner just say, no, I'd rather have you guys do it?
It's typically because then most of the projects, when you average it out, you've got those higher cost jobs and then you've got those lower cost jobs. Typically our jobs are near the $20,000.
The ones you actually take out.
Correct. Yeah. When it averages out, when you add in those high cost units, it brings it down to $12,000.
And what did you and your staff do during COVID? If you couldn't go, could you go into homes?
No.
And you couldn't do any testing? What were you doing during that time?
Health department needs. We did a lot of working with the health department. All of their job duties as assigned when it came to that. Because not only were we not able to go into the homes, but, you know, people didn't want us into their homes. So it was like, and HUD understood that, and they, you know, they understood where we were. And so they pushed back some of those benchmarks that we had and those goals that we had because they knew that we weren't able to go into the homes. But we would work then in other manners, whether that be contact tracing. But then that wasn't paid out of the grant.
Right.
That was paid out of
the
actual
calendar. So the grant money was kind of sitting there.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So we had two grants simultaneously running at one time during COVID. We had the 2017-20 grant, and then we applied for that the grant we have now. And in January 2021, we had two grants running simultaneously. So we're trying to close out one grant and start up another. That's typically how it always is we're trying to overlap. So
the slide that had the ovals embedded that, you know, lead poisoning causes this, cause all these correlations.
Correct.
To, you know, throughout the future. Is there a way for you to follow up with me? I don't know if anyone else is interested on the source of that data, like how lead poisoning is statistically correlated to.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just did a presentation on it, so I can get that.
All right. I'd like more information on that.
I would too.
Okay. Yeah, I just presented at the Living Free program as well. I went to the jail and presented to the females and the males in regards to that. And a lot of the males were very interested in learning about taking on those scholarships and that funding because they want to be able to do that they know how to do that type of work. So. Providing services to those that are incarcerated and trying to get help.
Any other questions from supervisors? Youth and governance?
So besides the like age of the home requirement and the income requirement, how do you choose what homes to actually go into and do risk evaluations? And then is there a way for homeowners to contact you if they think there's a problem?
They can contact us, but typically the grant is set up to go into the homes where we know that there is going to be children under the age of 6, pregnant women, like a rental property, so they can come to us, but in my grant I'm stipulated that I can only do 10% of homes that have no children at all and it's owner occupied. So typically we can deal with children under the age of 6. Otherwise I can only do, out of that 204, I can only do 10% of those units that have no children whatsoever in it. The grant is made for rental units because we know that there's going to be a high turnover to children under the age of 6. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from supervisors?
I can leave my business cards. You have my information on the slide. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I have no other business. So is there a motion to adjourn?
We adjourn.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you.
No, I'm the opposite.
Just for the shocker.
Yeah.
can maybe catch him on the way. You want her card?
I feel like I gotta see how it ends.
No? Very informative.